各位弟兄姐妹晚安。
晚安。
今天跟大家分享的这段经文呢，是在马可福音。事实上，在三个福音书呢都有提到这件事情，就是有一个血肉的妇女，在耶稣的后面呢摸他的衣裳穗子，那么希望他的血肉可以得到医治。那当他摸这个耶稣的衣裳穗子的时候，耶稣觉得有能力从他身上出去了，所以他就回头就问这些人说，有谁摸了我的衣服这样子。那么为什么主耶稣要回头来问这个人为什么摸他的衣裳呢？那后来呢，这个是在马可福音第五章这么说的，耶稣周围观看，要见做这事的女人，那女人知道在自己身上所成的事，就恐惧战惊，来伏在耶稣跟前，将实情全告诉他。耶稣对他说，女儿，你的信救了你，平平安安的回去，你的灾病痊愈了。那主耶稣他不但医治这个妇人他的身体的疾病，他也医治了他的心，因为可能这个病使得他见不得人啊。那但是呢，主耶稣透过这样的一个回头问他，让他的信心可以得到坚固，帮助他能够心里可以得到医治。那么这个今天在我们请到 Nelson 来跟我们分享灵性的支持，我想这个是一个很重要的课程。那待会儿呢Brian会介绍 Nelson 了，但是我呢也要先介绍今天在座的两位第一届的学员，有进，然后呢梅林是我的太太，郑重介绍。那我在这个机构多久呢？他就在这个机构多久啊，他是我最好的这个搭档跟伙伴。那我想就好，那我们一起哦。还有一件事情，你们看过这本书吗？
没有，
还没有啊。慎重推荐，这个是我们希望之星第一个刊物，第一个出版品，是由维山跟另外一位义工叫做赵波倩，他们两位，一个是社工师，一个是护士，写的一个叫做《在爱中告别我人生的最后一程》啊，那是中英对照的。待会儿你们有兴趣的话，结束之后你可以跟我拿哈。那每本是5块钱啊。那好，我们一起先做个祷告。慈悲的天父，我们再次感谢赞美你，谢谢你恩待我们每一位在你面前有心要学习怎么样来关心人的这些你的儿女。愿主你恩待我们，也透过今天你所差派的仆人 Nelson 还有 Blanche，让他们的口中所说的话都能够来造就我们，让我们的身心灵都能够健壮，能够成为你合用的器皿，来服侍这个世代的人。我们把一切的时间恭敬交托在主的手中，这样祷告奉耶稣基督的名。
好，谢谢大家。我们先 check in 一下听筒震动。 OK， 那先从移动。
我很高兴今天能够来这里，因为我上礼拜缺课，所以一直觉得很 guilty。 那今天礼拜四的时候就非常高兴，然后早早的离开公司，所以我心情非常的开心，很高兴回到大班。
今天也是非常的开心，因为我们刚刚结束了一个非常忙碌的工作坊，然后终于可以喘一口气，回到以前的生活步调，所以开心。
我也是很开心，因为其实已经上了3个月的课，都能够坚持，然后然后明天晚上要去到 Austin 跟几个朋友一起去，然后去看一个40年没有见的朋友，所以很开心。
在讲到这个，我想到我明天要跟一个跟两位37年没见的国中同学见面。其实这个礼拜很累啊，身体很累，不过我觉得很释放，然后 looking forward 这个礼拜的学习。
OK，
很高兴，因为下雨了，所以早上车很乱，但是下雨了就家里面的草不会死了，我们公司的水就可以卖了。水不需要水嘛，所以很高兴。
我也同样，我也是很高兴，因为下雨，我们的那个 sprinkler system 坏掉了，所以草地很干很干。今天终于下雨，很高兴。
感谢主，终于他已经学了三个月了哈。那每一次学习都有收获，主的喜乐就是我们的力量。再继续坚持下去，再大概还有四次就要结束这个课程。好。
我觉得也很兴奋呢，因为礼拜六的这个讲习会呢，有将近100个人报名啊，所以我们很期待这个讲习会能够成为很多人的帮助。
前礼拜比较忙，所以本来有点忙乱，但是今天下午也有点时间休息一下，所以现在也很开心来到这里。
我昨天动了白内障手术，今天早上去复检，刚回来，我们在一个高速公路转弯的时候，我先生轮胎失控，整个转，我先生就那个时候一句话说完，可是感谢主，居然前后都没有车子，我们就等于三转了一个大圈子，就碰到旁边，轮胎都没有撞坏，只是轮胎，我们现在决定要换轮胎，我们还开回来，我还帮他做指挥，他后面的车子撞到他，所以感谢主很保守平安，而且我那时候在想，哇，这样震动，我居然还可以。我觉得还好，我还好，照理是24小时不能弯腰，不能怎么样，但我感谢主保守十分平安。
很平静，很期待今天巧克力。
有点紧张，因为所以再三交代不能迟到。我刚才还在这个 cruise， 所以我在赶快说想啊，会不会迟到？会不会迟到？结果没迟到，还好。
很多的事情其实有些乱，但是我想我坐在这里，我开始慢慢就是 focus。
刚才有几位谈到下雨的事情，然后昨天晚上半夜醒来，听见外面下雨了，就很兴奋。但是一想，学校的屋顶需要修葺，漏雨，然后院长家的房子也漏雨，然后心里面很担心，就为他们祷告。然后这个课程我非常享受，学到这里，也非常的期待。
你看那个宝宝在还没开始，他就已经学习了，就是。
还有你是不是可以安
静一下？义工。
所以。Okay. 早上第一次下来就塞车，就说
塞好厉害。
我一天的生活就是从忙乱中开始，然后整天公司很多事情，然后今天就这样，所以我就想说，今天晚上我坐在这里，今天一整天坐最久的，所以我很享受。
可以来休息，
来休息。
很平静，很喜乐来上课。
今天应该不嗨也不大，平平。
很高兴，还是可以准时过来，学习。
本来有点困，但因为就是去的比较晚，然后呢，一进门一点都不困。
妈呀！我居然晚了，我觉得我不会晚的。
Yeah, I'm very honored to be here, and you are the inspiration why I do this kind of work. I apologize, I don't speak Mandarin very well, but I understand it perfectly. I speak Cantonese as my main language, but if you wouldn't mind, I would like to speak in English. You can ask me questions in Mandarin. Thank you very much for inviting me.
我今天也是，我其实我前两天哈，没有到办公室，请了两天的假，本来想好好休息，但是发现我，每次只要想请假呢，我的身体就开始
就是我的身体就想休息，就他就开始生病，所以今天回来还是觉得挺倦的，但是一样哈，我觉得看到各位你们都出现了哈，我觉得很开心。请你先看一下我给你们的那个好的文件，谢谢。
哎，什么？莉莉眼是哪个？哦，这个打过了？
没有，我跟你说
了。有打过了。
这是今天的吗？
对，今天的。还有这一份呢。
谢谢。
威廉，还有
这
个，还有这个，
还有一份这个。
有一份。哦，慧兰也没有。
灵性关怀，生命末期跟灵性关怀是，都在里面，是没有办法在任何一个阶段，被分开的。好，那今天非常的，真的非常的高兴和神为我们预备了，这个一个 chaplain， 那他之前是在那个Mission Hospice， 在半岛那边有一个机构啊，一个白人的主人机构，那这个机构对我们非常的 generous， 他们在我们要筹划 hospice 的这个过程当中，给我们很多的一些保育。那现在那个这个时候他转到 Chinese Hospital， 好去那边担任那个地方的 chaplain， 那可能就有更多的机会去服务我们华人朋友。那我想从他的一个既是专业的灵性辅导员，他又是一个一个 Christian， 所以呢，从这样的一个角度，他可以跟大家分享哈，什么是生命末期里头的这个灵性关怀，跟我们大家认为的，好，我们大家可能脑袋里头有一些自己认为的灵性关怀。我们可以看看不同的角度，那有问题的话呢，在最后有十五分钟可以发问，所以这个 session 会一直进行到八点钟，一样请大家在时间上面尽量控制，有半个小时的分享，后面剩下不管还有几分钟到八点你可以问问题。 OK， 好，那谢谢，我们现在就请小朋友们。 OK， 你们的那个 PowerPoint 里头的第一个是单页的，用英文写的那个是这个时候帮我们准备的哈。
Thank you very very much for inviting me here. I cannot emphasize enough that what you are doing is extremely important. And it's an inspiration for all the staff that's working in the hospice. I never thought that I would become a chaplain. I always wanted to be a volunteer, and I started looking into being a volunteer. But just somehow, I think this is the Lord's calling to just arrange things for me so I can have a chance to be a chaplain. So I'm here to share my experience with you. And I just want to, my name is Nelson Lau. I have been doing chaplainship for about 4 years now. I have my training in a hospital. I started doing my training in a hospital in San Francisco called California Pacific Medical Center, Taiping Yang Yiyuan. And I was there for 2 years as a part-time chaplain, 20 hours a week. And after that, I was a chaplain, part-time chaplain for a Chinese hospice in San Francisco. It's called the Self-Help for the Elderly. You might have heard about the An Lao Zhi Zuo. And I was there for about 1 year, and then I worked with Mission Hospice for another year. And now, I'm a chaplain for the Chinese hospital. I've been there for 3 weeks. I need all your prayer. So, what is a hospital chaplain? When I ask people, when people think of a hospital chaplain or hospice chaplain, they think that that's what I do. I go pray for the patient. That's what people think. Or people think that I'm Mother Teresa. I take care of the poor, of the sick. Some people think that chaplains, Charlie Chaplin, think that I'm a clown. Some people think that a chaplain will preach. They go to the hospital, go to the people's house, and preach the gospel. And I think that a lot of you, almost all of you are Christian, and that's one of the things that we all wanted to do, is to share the gospel for others. Some people think that I'm a judge because, you know, I'm sick. I must have done something wrong. And they think that the chaplain is there to judge them, to tell them what they've done wrong. And lastly, a lot of people think that I'm the angel of death. When they are sick, when they are the final days, when a chaplain or a priest or a clergy walk into the room, they're very, very afraid. They think that death is near. That's why they call a chaplain to be. But that's not what I do. What I do is I sit with people, I talk with people, and they ask me to pray. I will pray for them. I don't impose my view on them. I am there to care for them, just like any one of you, just like the nurses, the doctors, the social workers. And I understand all of us wants to evangelize on people, because a lot of people, you know, you might think that someone is about to die, and I want to save them, and I want to spread God's word for them. Unfortunately, this is not what the hospice do. That's not our main function as a hospice. So hospice is to care for people who's about to die. You can bring your own Christianity into the room. That's what I think drives all of us to do what we do, because we are following Christ and being a good disciple, we go to care for people. So what is a chaplain? What is our training? What kind of training do we need? Well, usually, as I told you before, I was going to be a volunteer, and I end up being a chaplain. So all of you, I invite you, if you have a desire to be with patients, to care for people, consider being a chaplain. And I started looking into the chaplainship when I'm 50 years old. So, you know, so that you are very young here, I can see that. So that's a really very rewarding thing to do. Okay, so the first thing that most of the chaplain, if you want to get a job as a chaplain, the first thing that they want to do is to have a background in divinity or theology or ministry, some kind of a master's degree in theology and divinity. The other thing is training. 20 years ago, nobody knows what the hospice is. So they just hire someone who has a little bit of theological background to be the chaplain. Nowadays, everywhere, the hospice, hospital, they want you to have training. And the most acceptable training is called clinical pastoral education, CPE. Do we have any minister here, pastor, minister here? Okay. So some of the seminary, they will require, if you are ordained minister, you want to study ministry, they want to have one unit of the CPE. One unit of CPE means 400 hours of training in a hospital. But to be a chaplain, you will need 4 units of CPE, 1,600 hours of training. And then most of the time, they want to you to be certified, but for one of the three associations. The first one, Associate Professional Chaplains, are more for Protestant. The second one is for Catholic. The third one is for Jewish. And there are other associations too, but these are the three main ones. And if you get certified by one of them, they reciprocate the other one. So that's basically the minimum kind of background in order to be a chaplain. So what is spiritual care? We talk about spiritual care. You mentioned that you've been talking about it since the first day. So what is spiritual care? In your mind, what do you think spiritual care is? What is spiritual? Is spiritual Christian belief? Is that the only thing that is spiritual? I mean, do we have to be a Christian, a Protestant, to be spiritual, when you talk about spiritual? Or you're Catholic. You know, Catholic is more spiritual. We got St. Ignatius spiritual exercise, right? Is that all that is for spiritual idea? What about Muslims? What about Jewish? Are they spiritual? How are we going to deal with that? You know, you're going to have a lot of patients that it's not only that, you have Buddhist patients, you have Hindu patients. Are they spiritual? Can you find some spirituality in other religion than your own? Right? When I first started, I kind of, in my mind, I thought, wow, I'm just going to go and, you know, pray with all the Christian patients. But I start working with hospice, start working with hospital. Christian are very, just a small part of the whole generation. So how do we deal with people with other religion? What about people with no religion? They find spirituality in the nature. Right? I mean, when you look at a beautiful sunset, do you feel spiritual? Do you feel that there is much more than what's here? What's, you know, what we feel, and there's something beyond us? Or when you look at the stars, you lie down. I mean, one of the most spiritual experiences I had is that I went camping, and I lie down, and I look at the sky, so I go, whoa! And feel that how small I am. And that's a spiritual experience for me. What about you looking at animals? All those wonderful animals that are in the earth. So ask yourself, what is spiritual? You're going to be sitting with a lot of patients that has no religion. Can you connect with them? Can you connect with them beyond religion? There is something more transcendent. Transcendent means something that is, you know, it's untouchable, that is something out there that can connect us. So if a chaplain go into a hospital room or someone's house, if we are not praying for them, we're not blessing them, we're not talking about Bible with them, what do we do? What do we do? What is our purpose? What is my motivation? What's my goal? If my goal is to convert people into Catholicism or Christianity, I'm in the wrong business. If I go into a patient's room and I start saying, hey, let me tell you about Jesus Christ, or let me pray for you, let me you know, you cannot go, you would go to hell if you don't convert to Christianity. If I say that to the patient, the next day I'll be fired. I would not have a job. So if that's not what we do, what do we do? What is our purpose? What is our motivation? What motivates me? In my mind here, I know that, well, there's the truth. I want to spread the truth. I want to tell people the joy that I found. But on the other hand, I'm limited to what I can do. So what do we do? So one thing I always think about is that what kind of boundary do we need to set? There are certain things that we can do. I mean, I ask patients all the time, are you Christian? Do you have a faith? Do you have a religion? Are you Buddhist? I ask patients, that's appropriate for me to do, to explore their spirituality. But it's not appropriate for me to say that, well, let me tell you about Christian if you are not Christian. Let me tell you how what salvation is. That's kind of crossed the boundary a little bit. But what can we do if we don't do that? I kind of look at the gospel. A lot of people, I think you must be very familiar with this thing. Jesus asked me to visit the sick, to visit people in jail. People didn't ask me. Jesus didn't ask me to convert them. He only asked me to be with them, to visit them, to be kind to them. So I always remember that when I go into a room, and I always remember that this is my call to discipleship. And when Jesus tells the story of the Good Samaritan to the scholar, what did he say at the end? He said, go and do likewise. That's the word, go and do likewise. Do what likewise? To treat other people as our neighbor. To make myself as a neighbor to the other people so I can treat them well, that I could help them and have compassion for them. So that's what I remember when I go into a room, a patient's room. So every one of us, you know, chaplain, volunteer, you need to find your own comfort point. You need to find some source from the Bible or from teaching from your minister that you could bring it with you when you visit a patient. You have to have a purpose and motivation. And I can tell you that if your motivation is to convert people or to spread the Christianity word or read the Bible with them, that's a very weak motivation, I think. Because we need to, unfortunately, when you get into a hospice, you are no longer a faith-based entity. You are a service entity. Before, when you are another organization, you are a faith-based entity, and you are there to spread the gospel or to preach or to evangelize. But here, now, we have a little boundary. We need to respect other people. So if we cannot do that, what can we do? So the thing that we be able to do, the very first thing that we need to do is to have compassion. And there are three levels of compassion. It's called pity, sympathy, and empathy. Very different, very different. Pity, right? You see someone on the street begging for food, you feel pity. You really feel very sorry for them. You pity them, right? That's at least you need to do. But beyond pity, it's sympathy. Sympathy means that there is a resonance. You see a patient and a family. This person, his mother is dying, or the so he's very, very sad and feels a lot of pain. So you, when you, you feel sympathy when you remember your own experience with your own mother or father, when you see someone in pain, it kind of arouses your own pain. So you feel your own pain, and now you could understand what he's going through. That's sympathy. But sympathy is your pain. You are not feeling his or her pain. You are only feeling sorry for yourself because you remember what you went through with your mother. It's not bad. But I'm asking you, challenge you to be more than that, to go into empathy. My wife told me, well, my parents are here, right? Both parents are alive. My wife, both parents, they are gone, they're dead. So she always told me, she said, how can you be a chaplain? You don't understand pain. Because your mother and your father is still here, they are still alive, you would not understand what other people are going through. And I've been troubling by this all these times. For many years, I've been troubling by this. And I asked myself whether I can be a good chaplain, whether I can feel pain of other people. And when I learned empathy, that freed me. But empathy is that it doesn't matter what your experience is. You put yourself in other people's point of view. You pretend, you become the other person and feel that person's pain. It's not a very easy thing to do, but if you can do that, I believe that that is a, people could feel you. So when you look at a beggar begging food on the pavement, when you feel pity for them, that's one thing. But can you imagine, next time when you see someone on the street asking for you for food, can you imagine yourself to be that person? And experience this person, what he or she has been through. Perhaps that it will touch you deeper than just saying, I pity you, or I feel sorry for you. Now, you become that person and feel their sorrow, feel their pain. And that's what empathy is. And that's what I think a good chaplain should do. And all three of these. The other thing is that with called fourfold ways. That's what I think this is a very good way for me to go to visit patient, and as a volunteer, that's also a very, very good thing for you to do. What are the fourfold ways? The first thing is to be present. Right? When you visit someone, you know, I can be here, you could be listening to me talking here, you might be thinking about something else. I don't know, right? Wrong, I can feel it. If you are thinking about something else, or you're daydreaming, and you're looking at my shirt, you know, the pants, I can feel it. You're not with me. You're not present. You're not 100% present. And when you pray, sometimes I pray, and then my mind is thinking about something. It's not present. So the first really important thing is to be present, to give your 100% attention to the people. Someone told me once before is that about President Clinton. What is so amazing about President Clinton is when he talks to you, you would feel that you are the most important person in the world. There's nothing more important. So that's present. That you are here. You are all here. You are the most important thing to me now. So that's present. The second thing is do not judge. You cannot judge people. If you are genuinely care, whether, you know, you might judge him, you know, this is a Buddhist. You know, he missed so much. If he would just be a Christian, how much more, he doesn't understand. A lot of judgment we bring to our visit, not only religiously, but, you know, I see someone who is in a very good environment, let's say they are financially very good, but they are dying, right? And this guy is complaining a lot, and then you go and say, what would you complain about? You have had a good life, you are financially secure, your boys are here, your girls are here, your grandchildren. Look at Mr. Sun that I visited 2 days ago. He has nothing. I'm judging this guy. I'm judging this person based on something that is outside of this person. We bring a lot of judgment into a room when we go into a room, to patient room. And I'm saying that if you curb your judgment, you would have a much better relationship with the person that you are ministering. Focus on heart and meaning when you talk to people, and I talk to people. You know small talk, you know what small talks are, right? I hate small talk. You go into an elevator, this guy tells you, hey, what's going on? It's raining today, it's great. You know, 49-1 lost the matches on Saturday. What about the Apple, the stock of Apple dropped 1.8% today? What does it mean? Does it matter? Does it matter? Anything, all these things that they said, does it matter? Is it from the heart? You know, is there any meaning to it? It's just, you know, just try to be friendly. If a chaplain go in to visit a patient and try to be friendly, he's a very poor chaplain. I'd rather this chaplain say nothing, just to sit there and be with the patient. That's more heart and feeling than talking about small talk. And then lastly, let go of the outcome. I know that when we go in and talk to a patient, there are certain things that we want to do. We want to bring them peace. We want to lower their fear. We want them to feel love. A lot of these things we might never achieve. So if you go in and think about, I want to do this, I want to do that, it's very easily you would think that you would fail. And when you fail, you would feel terrible. I accomplished nothing. So those are the fourfold ways by Angelis Arian. She's very, very, you could Google her on the web, and she has a lot of lecture on YouTube. You could hear her lecture. She just died recently. So this is really important. We all want to do things. I used to be an architect. You know, I want to do things. As a chaplain, you cannot do things. There's nothing to do. It's be. You have to be with people. And one very good thing about is Chinese Tao De Jing. You've heard of that. Lao Tzu saying, Wu Hui. It's wonderful. Do nothing. Do nothing. It's not easy. He said, taste the tasteless. How do you taste the tasteless? Right, but that's it. Sometimes, do nothing is better than doing things. They are, a lot of times there's nothing to do but be. Many times I sit with a patient, I didn't say anything. There's nothing said. But after I sat with them for 20 minutes, I feel that there is a relationship, and they feel there is a relationship. As a volunteer, you are asked a lot of time to go be a companion for a patient, a lot of time. We use a volunteer a lot to be a companion for some very lonely patient, very isolated patient. They might not want to talk to you. And a lot of volunteers say, oh, there's nothing to talk about. What am I going to do? Sit there and be with them. And that's a blessing. That's a blessing to them. And they would feel your peace. Don't get anxious. If you get anxious and want to do something, they will feel you're anxious. If you are calm and cool and say, it's okay, I don't want to do anything. I'm doing nothing. I'm just here to be with you. I look at you. I give you witness. You know, and I feel your pain. I want to be compassionate to you. You don't even have to say a word. And your presence will be felt. So another thing is that as a volunteer, as a chaplain, I rely on volunteer report a lot, because I don't know whether you have started talking about volunteer report. I cannot go out and look and really spend, you know, an hour with a patient every day. Right? Volunteers can. They can spend a lot of time with patients. And you would learn a lot of things that I'm not able to learn. And from your report, I could assess what's the most needed for the patient. How am I doing on time? So what are the things what are the spiritual issues? What do you see, what do I see mostly in patients and a dying patient? Well, we're talking about hospice, you're talking about people with 6 months or less, right? But most of the people that I see only have weeks or days, you know, not months. A few of them have months. So what are the issues? First one is mostly relational issue. What they are dealing with is forgiveness. They cannot forgive someone. Someone cannot forgive them. That kind of thing. Reconciliation. They really want to reconcile with someone. But there is so that's the very big issue that you will see from patient. Self worth. Oh, geez. You know, I'm no good. I'm burdened to my son. You know, now I'm sick, I'm dying, my son has to take care of me. They have their own family, he has their work. Yeah, I just want to die because, you know, I'm not worthy. They probably won't say that I'm not worthy. They just say that I'm a burden to my son, my daughter, or my husband. And very, very common. Loss of hope. I'm dying, they don't have no interest in anything, I don't want to talk to anyone, not even my family, not even my loved ones. They just don't have hope, and if they don't have hope, they will deteriorate very fast. Loss of meaning. I've been working all my life. I have a patient came here, 18 years old, doesn't know English, worked very, very hard, you know, doing odd jobs, doing two jobs, three jobs, bringing up their children. He's 55 years old, he's finally want to retire, save a lot of money, want to go travel, diagnose have end stage cancer. What's the meaning of it? What's the meaning of life? You know, I'm sick now, there's no hope. Why would I want to live anymore? You know. Lots of meaning. So those are the spiritual issues. And then also, I know that Blanche told me that you already went through this. You know the five stages of grief. And, you know, when you visit patients, just remember where they are. It's important. Put it on your report. Because if you see something, any one of these things, you should refer to the interdisciplinary team. You should tell social worker or tell the chaplain about this. Because that is really, really important, a clue that we want to get from you. So there are some challenges that we will face, you know, as a chaplain and as a volunteer. You would face what kind of challenge? First one is projection. Projection meaning I would project what I think on you. So, for example, if my uncle have this disease and he's feeling pain, and now I'm certain type of pain, I'm visiting another patient have same type of disease. I would project what I feel with my uncle onto this patient. And I see, let's say I see some family dynamics, I see, you know, a mother and a child is not talking or whatever, and I think about my own sister and I am not talking and I'm projecting, you know, how I feel about my sister onto the patient. It could be totally different scenario, but it's my own projection. I'm projecting something onto the patient. Fusion, you get too close to the patient. You know, you've been visiting the patient for so long, you feel that she's part of you, and you cannot separate yourself from them. You are so close to them, you're fused with them. And that's some challenge, that's a big challenge. How do we you know, you care for someone, you visit them once a week for, you know, 2 months, and you have the, you have feeling for them, and then when they die, how do you deal with that? They might ask you a difficult question. I mean, they definitely ask chaplain this kind of question. Let's say I have a patient in ICU, and the family is very Christian, and they expect a miracle. The doctor said that it's really this person almost brain dead. That's, you know, it's very difficult for the for family to accept that. And there are many different reasons that they expect a miracle. One reason is they are really, really have very strong faith. They really believe that God will, you know, lay their hands on the patient and heal them. But there are other reasons. They feel guilty, or they just cannot accept what's happening. They are in denial. So those are the things we need to find out, and it's not that, it's an extremely difficult thing to deal with, especially when we are Christian. Right? We are Christian, we should have faith, we should expect miracles, but I can tell you that miracle doesn't happen that often, and how do you deal with family? So when you hear these kind of things, please let the chaplain or the social worker know. Unanswered prayer, very often, say, I pray, I'm a good Christian, I pray for healing. Why doesn't God answer my prayer? What did I do wrong? Where is God? You know, I have been a great Christian. My prayers are good. Unanswered prayers. Being punished. Oh, I know why. Because I've been a bad person. God punished me. You know, I was unfaithful to my husband. You know, God punished me. You know, I'm a gambler. You know, God punished me. I haven't been to church for so long. So the other challenge I face, and you probably would face too, is self-care. Now you all is bringing a lot to the patient, caring them. What about yourself? How do you care for yourself? How do you recuperate? You know, you might be asked to be with a patient at the moment they die. You know, you might spend a lot of time with them, or you might, sometimes they want you to be there for the last 8 hours or whatever. It's strain on you. It's a very difficult thing to do. How do you care for yourself? How do you rejuvenate yourself? What kind of tools do you have? What kind of resource do you have? So, what are the some of the code of ethics? What are ethics? What are some of the ethics for spiritual care? The first thing, most important thing, is dignity. We are here to preserve the dignity of the patient and their family. You know, when you are about to die at your end stage, very few dignity. You need people to help you go to the toilet. You know, where's the dignity in that? We need to really respect people and remember that it's a very important for them. Just imagine yourself, just be empathy. Imagine yourself to be the patient. Would you want people to wipe your behind? I mean, is there a dignity in that? Respect the right for the patient. That's one of the things that it's really important, even though they really are very frail, and but they still have the right to refuse medicine. You know, sometimes the family would say, "Oh, come on, you need to do whatever you need for mom," you know, and all kinds of intervention. But the patient itself was very clear that they don't want any intervention. Do you have problem with that? I mean, do your Christian faith have problem with that? Some Christians say you need to do as much as you can, no matter what. Right? How do you deal with that? If your congregation or if your belief is like that, and the patient tell you that I don't want that, I mean, can you live with that within your conscience? confidentiality, very important. People tell you things that they would not tell anyone. A chaplain, certainly, they tell me things that they would not tell anyone. I need to keep confidential things. And one of the things, this is, I put it in because that's a very Catholic thing. It's a Catholic social thought. I don't know whether there are any Catholics here. One of the things we always say is that care for the poor is a priority. The poor has a preference because when we look at the gospel, Jesus was very passionate, especially for the poor. So I think a lot of the patients that you would have are very, they might be very disadvantaged. So we remember the poor. And that's about everything.
Thank you.
So, do you have any questions?
We have 10 minutes. You can ask any questions.
Kathleen, I do have a question. During your sharing, you have mentioned that a lot of times you are sitting with the patient without having any conversation. So, how long you had for this kind of situation, how long you were sitting with the patient, and then in what kind of condition you will just leave? You know, that kind of situation is, to me, it's like very awkward.
Very awkward. Yeah,
you go in there without saying anything, you may sit there, and the patient might just be in the halfway sleep. So between you and the patient, you don't have any conversation. So what did you do then? You just sit there?
It really depends. It really depends. So let me ask you, you think that that's awkward. Is it awkward for you or awkward for the patient?
I think it's awkward for myself.
Awkward for yourself. I want you to place yourself as the patient. Do you think it is awkward for that patient?
Might not be, because patient might be asleep, you know.
Yeah.
So he might.
So even though it is not asleep, let's say I'm a patient. I just don't want to talk to you.
Okay.
Okay, I'm here. I just don't want to talk to you. You here? You be my companion, and you sit there. So I'm here like that.
Right.
Do you feel awkward?
Yeah, I don't know. I should move forward, or I should just leave, or sit or standing for like 5 minutes. It's quite long.
It's quite long. Yeah, I understand. When I first started, I had the same problem, and I talked to one of my mentor. Is that a chaplain for 30 years? I said, you know, I was assigned to this wing of the hospital. Mm-hmm. This wing of the hospital are for people with stroke. They cannot talk. Mm-hmm. And I have to sit there, and I feel so uncomfortable. You know, I don't know what to do. I can pray. Yes, I can do. But I said, I mean, deep down inside, I'm not feeling peaceful. And he told me one thing that changed my whole thinking. He said, think of that patient to be your mother. So if your mother is sick and she doesn't want to talk, would you feel uncomfortable sitting with your mother? Just sitting, not doing anything. Just relax and sitting and not doing anything. Would you feel uncomfortable then?
Do you touch the patient then?
Sometimes I do.
You can, right? It's not, we can do that.
It's you need to check with, I mean, if the patient can talk, you need to check with them. Say, may I touch you? May I put your hands on you? If the patient cannot speak, probably yes and no. And you really need to. Yeah. So that's what I was saying. It's very difficult. Do and be. It's very difficult. We all want to do things. At least, I mean, even if you sit there, you want to do things as prayer. Right? You want to pray with them, even though apparently you're not doing something. Inside, you are doing things. It's very difficult not to do anything at all and be with them. Now you ask me, what's the reason? Why is that? Then what are you? Why are you there if you don't do anything? Well, in my mind, I'm there. I empty myself and I let God come in. I let Christ come in to me. When Christ comes into me, and I becoming a conduit between Christ and the patient. So first of all, I need to empty myself. I empty my thought, and no thought. I'm just thinking Christ coming to me, so I can be with the patient. I know it's very difficult. I'm not. Yeah, I. it's easy to talk about it. It's very difficult. I still have, you know, difficulty in doing it. One of the difficulty is I'm in the hospital, right? I'm in the hospital. People expect me to visit patient, right? I'm sitting here for 20 minutes doing nothing. Nurse will walk by and see that I'm doing nothing. And he'll say, what is this chaplain doing? Is he resting? And I don't want to explain myself to them. So it's a very difficult, great question, very difficult. But I just need you to think about two things. Number one, whether it's uncomfortable for you or uncomfortable for the patient. That's number one. Number two is try to be and do less.
And how long you will stay there?
Longest I've stayed something like that, maybe 45 minutes.
And then you just quietly leave. Mm-hmm.
But a lot of time, maybe 10, 15 minutes. Yeah. Yes, sir?
I have kind of follow-up question, but you might sound silly, because I'm from the Bay Area, high tech. So we kind of evaluate things based on the result.
Yeah.
So in a situation like this, months later, a year later, how the hospital evaluate your quote-unquote performance?
That's a, I tell you four months from now when they evaluate me. But no, spiritual care, we are supposed to do that. This is what expected of the chaplain. That obviously they're not all the patients can talk, right? Obviously a big part of the patient, especially at the end of their life, cannot talk. Then why? What do? You don't visit them? Right? I mean, you have to visit them. You as a hospice chaplain, we are obligated to offer spiritual support to every patient. Now, they would reject us, then that's fine. But if we must contact them within 5 days. Within 5 days, we must contact them. So, lots of time, I just tell the family, a lot of time the family ask me, well, my mother cannot talk. Why are you there? You know, what good would it do? You know, and I would explain to them a calm presence a lot of time will bring people peace. You could see that. You could see that. About a few weeks ago, I visited a patient. She's terminally ill with cerebral palsy from birth. So she's 39 years old, she can never speak. She's always like that, you know, very painful. So that day I walk into the facility, they told me that this patient is in pain. She said, just in pain. And I asked him, have you called the nurse? He said, yeah. Have you given them medicine? Yeah, but it's not helping. Right? So I went into the room, I don't know what to do, I can pray, but all of a sudden I there's a feeling in my something tell me that I should touch the patient. So I lay my hand on her hand and just very gently like that, and I was very peaceful. And I tell you, after half a minute, she'd been screaming all day long. After half a minute, she fell asleep and was very, very peaceful. I look at her face, it's very peaceful. And the patient died a few hours after. So, there are a lot of things that a peaceful presence can bring, and I'm sure you would encounter that, because many of your patients, especially the last few days, they will not be able to communicate with you. The only thing you can do is sit with them and be compassionate.
Do they know you, your presence? Do
they know? I believe so. Yeah. Yes?
How often you visit patients and how many patients you visit every day?
That depends. Uh-huh. Different institution.
Right.
Different, requires differently. Mm-hmm. In the bigger hospital, we are asked to visit 4 patients an hour.
One hour.
Four patients an hour. In a hospice, we visit about, I would say maybe four to five, maybe four patients a day.
Uh-huh.
A day. Yeah. So now I'm working in a smaller hospital. No one gave me any guidelines. I just go around and I just say whatever, you know, needed. But there are some very important, like people in ICU or they are near death that I must visit.
How often you visit the same person?
Whenever I need it. Okay. If I go to visit patient, first of all, I assess them. I assess what kind of spiritual pain they are. Mm-hmm. Or they are very peaceful. They are very, you know, a lot of support from their family. They are peaceful. And I don't visit them that often.
So if they reject you when you offer, how do you deal with that?
It's very difficult at the beginning when I first started.
I did a rejection before, so I'm just wondering.
Yeah, it was, but you have to remember this. They reject you now, they might not reject you later. I mean, a lot of times when I go back, and they'll come back. What I deal with it is, I think about that, and I say, there's something God doesn't need me to do. You know, and I like it.
Okay. Yeah, 我们的时间已经到了。
Just a quick question. You visit them, the patient or the people around it, would they think that you are a stranger or would they know the chapel? You know,
no, I have to introduce myself.
Okay, so then
every time,
yeah.
I would tell them. A lot, like when I give you the first pictures, some of them they don't want to because they think that I'm at the end of life, you must be, this must be that's it, you know, sending a chaplain.
Right.
A lot of people don't want me to visit, but I don't introduce myself as chaplain anymore. I introduce myself as spiritual counselor a lot of times. And so maybe that would help.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, wow. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, 好，那我们现在休息5分钟哈。